Tonight.
Get down tonight.
Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scows West.
West.
We are on issue 4.5, and this is the always loved comic reviews. And this is an opportunity for you to find out what's going on and what people are reading. Maybe get some inspiration on what to buy and put in your bin, because your bin's not already too full. And unlike us. And so, yeah, listen in and see what you like. Maybe I'll start off, because I have a lot. So, and I'm going to just do quick reviews for a couple of these. All right, Shirtless Bear Fighter.
What number the hell? One. Oh, my God.
All right. So it's supposed to be goofy and action and comedy. I get that. It fully wasn't for me. Yeah. It's not the kind of thing I'm going to put into my bin. It just wasn't for me personally. However, I could see that if you like this style, you're going to love Shirtless Bear Fighter. The premise ultimately is that there's this guy who was raised by bears, right? And he was raised by bears, and so he's been pretty much naked his entire life for the most part. And then so he's naked in this as well. He's shirtless, yes, but he's also just naked. And so they do pixelated shots of his private areas. And, you know, he does not have a normal size private area.
Oh, wow.
He has it, but for the proportion of his body, it looks right. It looks right. And the idea is that this guy is just going around beating up bears, and you're like, what is going on? And they're asking, basically the government comes in at some point in time and asks for his help. And he's like, no, I don't want to help you. I have a past, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And they try to bribe him with certain things that he loves. I'm not going to tell you what it is. You have to read it for yourself. And ultimately, he decides to help out. And his background is that he was raised by bears, but something happened and he turned on the bears. Like, no, now I'm all against bears. And it's ridiculous comedy. Like, his house is made out of bears. He has a bear plane made out of bears and that he's killed. And so it just goes on, and it gets more and more ridiculous. His nakedness is even funnier at certain points. And I overall think that it's a great comic for those who really are into this style. You're going to love it. It just isn't something I'm going to put into my bin every single week.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's my review of Shirtless Bear Fighter. Go check it out and see if it's for you.
I'm just flipping through this, and this looks like one of the funniest things ever. It's just, wow.
Yeah.
I can't even.
Yep. That's it. That's all I got. So for now. Anyone else? Who's next?
I'll go because I have a quick one to say about this. So this is New Superman number 12. One of my favorite DC runs right now. There's a lot of stuff going on in this, but what I thought was the most interesting about this was actually the Wonder Woman of China gets a lot of backstory in this.
Nice.
So there's this villain who's this giant turtle, and he keeps referring, and he's like this ancient guy that was found on the bottom of the ocean, and he keeps referring to Wonder Woman as Green Snake for a couple issues, and I was like, why is this? Are they going to explain it? And they certainly do. And it was really cool, actually, because I went to look it up. They have a little blurb in here about, like, this ancient Chinese myth about Green Snake and White Snake, which is an actual, like, really sort of household Chinese proverb about these two snakes that become women and fall in love with. One of them falls in love with a guy. The other one tries to protect her. And so I thought it was really interesting how Jean Yang brings in this Chinese folklore for the Wonder Woman's backstory,
right,
which is a call sort of to the original Wonder Woman, mm-hmm, who has this very mythological, this Greek mythological background,
yeah,
as well. And so to give her a similar sort of ancient background, but from a different culture's mythology, I thought was a real interesting testament to, like, the layers that are really going on in this book.
That's awesome.
As a Westerner myself, I know I'm missing out on a lot of stuff that goes in here, and I find myself Wikipedia-ing, like, very small panels.
That's cool, though.
Of it, yeah. It's really interesting. So
New Superman number what?
New Superman number 12, written by Gene Yang.
All right.
All right. Well, I've got a quick one here. The it's Batman issue 25, written by Tom King with art from Mikel Janine. This is the War of Jokes and Riddles part one. So this is going to be the, I think it's an 8-part storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's framed around, I think it's supposed to be year 2 of Batman. So this is a past story, and Batman is actually narrating to Catwoman, which was not answering the question of what happened at the end of the last issue of Batman, which, spoilers, if you haven't heard this, you're not paying attention to comic book news, but Batman proposed to Catwoman at the end of the last issue. And of course, they're not going to answer the question about this, but the storyline takes place in year 2 of Batman's history-ish, and Joker is trying to laugh. The existence of Batman has taken laughter away from him. So he holds up a nightclub, a comedy club, and is waiting for the jokes to appear and to make him laugh. And when they don't, it's a bang, and the next comedian must drag the body off of the stage. So...
Classic Joker.
Yeah.
Wow.
And during this time, this is post-Zero Year from the New 52 run, so Riddler is incarcerated, and he's been in there so long that the police are starting to use him as, like, an informant and a way to solve puzzles of criminal activity.
Mm.
So he gets brought on to this Joker case and walks out of the prison. So he walks out of Arkham... Yeah, and confronts the Joker, trying to tell Joker that, you know, maybe the best thing that we can do is team up. And it seems like Joker's going to go with it. But so he doesn't. Yes. So, beyond spoiling anything else, this is the framework that there's basically going to be a gang war between Joker and Riddler, and this is Batman still in a relatively early stage of his career trying to deal with that, and Joker being the arch nemesis, and then Riddler being one of the greatest criminal minds to ever exist. It was an interesting issue. Still not sold to Mikel Janine's art. I like his panels. So is this
in the past, or is this current? I'm confused.
So it's current Batman telling the story, but it is a story of the past.
Okay.
So, yeah, nice, confusing framework. But it's the final pages show basically the Rogues Gallery going at it. So we'll see what happens. Like I said, the art, not digging it, but sure. I do love the panel choices. He's an interesting storyteller, but it is that art style that I think is computer graphic models that are then either inked over or somehow digitally processed. So,
okay.
But, yeah. Great read, though.
All right. I'll try and do two really quickly. So, Ultimates Squared, or number two, however you want to say it. I canceled this from my bin, and I decided to read it. I picked up this last issue. I'm like, all right, let me read the final Ultimates Squared and see what happens. Darn it, if I'm going to put it back in my bin. It is so good. It really gets into Galactus and his new rebirth into, he's now the Life Bringer.
Okay.
And so the Planet Devourer. And Ego has apparently been on Galactus's list of planets to eat for a very long time. And has attempted to eat Ego many, many, many times, and has somehow been thwarted every time. Well, now Galactus is like, oh, hey, let's try to mend, you know, that relationship, because I'm not that person that I used to be. Ego's not having it. Like, no, you tried to eat me multiple times. I'm not about this. And what ends up happening is that you finally, Galactus sheds his armor, and he's the human that he's the human. He's the being that he was before he became Galactus. What? And he did that to allow himself to interact with Ego's brain, and then you get to see Ego before he became Ego, and they are both interacting as these species together.
As Eternals, essentially.
As Eternals, yep. And so they're discussing that the fact that they're even alive is because they're two people who were born to survive. Like, there were people that just, like, clung onto life so strongly that they became powerful. So anyways, I thought it was headed to, like, I thought Ego was going to be the new Herald. That's where I really thought it was going. What ends up happening is that Galactus, Galactus evolves Ego, is all I'm going to say. Then, at the end, the reason that that happened is because Galactus is putting a team together. And Ego was the last one he needed to be part of the team. And it shows the whole team at the last panel. Nope, I refuse to let you see it.
Oh my
god! I want you to be excited about that.
What?
So now I got to put Ultimate Square back into my bin, unless they do a new comic series just for Galactus's new team, which then that would be amazing. Mm. So I'm excited. I'll let you guys get into it later. What? Anyways, moving on really quickly to Green Valley. Issue number 9 is the last issue of Green Valley. Green Valley is over now. Yeah, and it was fantastic. It ended as amazing as it started. It's a fantastic book by Landis, and he did a great job of wrapping this whole story up. Just go buy it. Just go buy the trade. Go buy individual issues, whatever you need to do. Green Valley has been amazing from issue number 1 all the way to 9. So, and it gives some amazing, like, you just feel good at the end of this issue, which is nice.
Awesome.
Because I thought I was going to feel bad. Just the way that every issue ended badly. Like, something bad happens. But Green Valley ended very well.
Nice. Well, I have another quick one, too. This is The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, issue 21. So, this actually, it has one amazing part in it that is just amazing. So Brain Drain, the nihilist robot brain in a jar, is trying to become a superhero. And so in this issue, Squirrel Girl and her roommate go off to the negative zone for a week of vacation. And or weekend. And so it's boys' night out, pretty much. They're supposed to protect the city while she's gone. And there's just, like, one panel. Brain Drain's trying to, like, become, quote, bros with her two human friends, Koi Boy and Chipmunk Hunk. And awesome. And there's one part in here where he comes in wearing a baseball cap backwards on top of his brain in a jar, and he, like, sits on the table all cool and says, "Would any bros here like to consent to hang out, complete with my forthcoming high five in 3 seconds to indicate yes?" And just amazing. And so there's, but one of the reasons I actually really like this issue is it reminded me why Squirrel Girl is still a great superhero comic, not just for these great jokes, but it also has this amazing heist plan pretty much throughout the city. There's this, like, huge crime spree of all these classic villains. You got Dr. Octopus, you got, like, the Green Goblin.
Yeah.
You got all these people, like, what are they doing back? And then all these big name heroes come to stop there. You got villains, you got Captain Marvel, you got Doctor Strange, you know, Spider-Man, all these people. And then it turns out that these are just regular people dressing up as the superheroes coming in. So they have, like, a partner who goes in, robs the jewelry store as the Green Goblin, and they come in and they're like, "Don't worry, it's me, Spider-Man. I'm here to take the Green Goblin to jail." And so he gives back, like, most of the jewelry and palms, like, some of it.
What?
And then, like, Dr. Octopus, or, like, Mystique is in it, and she's, like, cutting art out of a frame, and Captain Marvel comes, and she's like, "Oh, no, don't worry, you boys, I got this. You can go home, and I'll take care of it." But they're just, like,
Working together.
And so, like, not only is it great jokes, but that's honestly, like, an amazing, like, villain plot point. Like, I can't believe that's not, like...
Yeah, how has that come up before?
Hasn't been thought of before. And this is just a one-off. It's not, like, a one-off issue. That's not going to come back later. So, like, I just love that whole thing. That's the perfect heist in any superhero universe. Dress up as the villain, and then the partner superhero comes in, and... Oh, man.
That's really cool.
That's a great premise.
It was a great premise. So then they have to figure out how to stop the fake ones. And anyway, it's just a great one-off issue, and so we'll get a new arc starting next issue for Squirrel Girl. Anyway.
Awesome.
All right. Well, I have something a little bit different here. It's Catalyst Prime Excel number one. Catalyst Prime was a really, really popular free comic day book, and it's starting in the universe. It's from Lion Forge Publishing. I wanted to see what was happening with this, the creating a new universe, and the reason I chose this book specifically was the fact that Damian Scott was doing the art. This is by Joe Casey and Damian Scott with inks by John Campanella. I love Damian Scott. I was a huge fan of his on Batgirl when Cassandra Cain was Batgirl. That was basically the only thing that brought me into reading the book. So with Excel, we're dealing with a speedster, a Flash-type character who... I won't spoil, like, getting the powers, but... So he's a 20-something... Looks like professional gamer. Like, that's what he does. But... He is a speedster, and he saves the city that he's in from a terrorist attack, from L.A., excuse me, he's in L.A., and he has to jump and stop a plane that's been hijacked. So he's running, you know, at super speed, and then jumps to save people out of the plane, and then to stop the terrorist. And after he does that, he runs immediately to the hospital, because although he has super speed, when his body catches up with him, he breaks all of the bones that a normal human would break in that scenario. So while he's in super speed, he doesn't feel pain. You know, he has heightened senses, but he doesn't have super strength. So he uses the velocity that he generates by running to, you know, scale buildings and almost fly, you know, jump extremely high and break through, you know, metal plating.
Right.
But his body breaks down afterward, and then he has to use his speed powers again to speed up the process of healing. So it's not an instantaneous effect. He has to, you know, have downtime in between. It's a really, like, it's a sweet book in terms of the art. It's really fun and kinetic. It left me cold. I didn't dig this when all was said and done. There was certain dialogue that made me feel really, really like it was a late 90s, early 2000s book.
Yeah.
And the storytelling sort of felt like it was a late 90s animated series episode one, as opposed to a comic book issue. Which, you know, I love that stuff. It's just... If you're launching a new universe, I felt like there was going to be something that was a little bit more spectacular about it, or a little bit more unconventional, or more modern. Maybe that was the thing that took me out of it, is it didn't feel new. It felt like a discarded story from earlier in the either early aughts or the 90s. Like, it was just a something that somebody picked up and then is doing now.
I see.
And there's also, like, the comic spotlight at the end talking about, you know, like, mini ads for the book. And I would normally not let this taint the comic itself, but I'm going to read one quick part of this. It says, "You get a fun-filled, faster-than-the-speed-of-sound adventure in the heart of L.A. with the person of color as the hero, not the sidekick. Get ready to run." And I read that, and, you know, as he's a Latino character, and as a Latino myself, you figure that was like, yeah, but I didn't get that. I felt like all you're doing is selling your whole book on the idea that you're poking fun at the Flash and the current Wally West idea. And I just, I don't know, like, I went, I already was sort of falling down on the book as it was going through, and then I read that and I went, okay, so you're gonna base your premise on this. So, I don't know, give it a shot. The art's really, really fun and kinetic, but...
Didn't do it for you.
Didn't do it for me.
This is Lion Gate?
Lion Forge. Lion Catalyst, Forge. Catalyst Prime Excel. As in accelerate.
Okay.
So.
All right. Yeah, not the spreadsheet.
Not Excel, yes. Not, not the spreadsheet.
And not the movie company Lionsgate, but the actual.
Yeah. But definitely flip through it if nothing else. It's good to see new companies emerge. It's going to keep the industry going. It's just maybe not the greatest debut.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay.
All
right.
So I will do Generation X, number 3. As I said, I'm a huge Jubilee fan, so of course I had to pick this up and read it. And Generation X, it's there's a ton of cameos in Generation X, and it kind of makes sense for them to do that, because this is a cast of younger mutants who really don't do well. You don't think of them immediately as like, oh, those are going to be future X-Men, because their powers don't really seem to do much in terms of battle and stuff like that. So you end up getting a lot of characters who do battle very well, having cameos within this book. This book features Nature Girl a little bit more than normal, in that she's pushing forward the plot line. And I really like her interaction. And I don't know if she's too far into nature. Like, I don't know how, what her, it's almost Swamp Thing-ish.
Okay.
A little bit. Mm. Where she cares more about nature than she cares about people situation. And she, basically they're at, a park zoo situation. And she's like, hey, there's been an attack on someone, the trees told me. So they go check it out. It ends up being a character named Face, that's part of the X-Men universe. And so they take him back to the infirmary, and they're like, what happened? And he's unconscious. He can't speak. He's mute. He's deaf. He can't speak. And so they end up, the newest character in this whole series, he has the ability to do... kind of like, his name is Nathaniel Carver, and here they have his name is Hindsight, although he doesn't have a code name yet, so that's interesting. And so Hindsight's ability is explained a little bit more. So you know how you do have some characters that can kind of see the past, and they see it through the character's eyes, right, of what's going on. So Hindsight is actually more powerful than that. He can actually see the entire situation, the entire environment. Is not through the person's eyes. He can see everything that's going on. So it was perfect in this situation where Face can't see or hear anything. He can see all of that stuff. So he sees the attacker, he sees what's going on, and the attacker seems to go underground, where Nature Girl points out, at first they're like, oh, the sewers, and Nature Girl points out that no, under the, I don't know if it's Central Park or where they are, I thought it was a zoo. Central Park Zoo. She says, no, there's caves. There's no sewer system. And so the team's like, all right, we should go tell Jubilee. And then one of the characters, I think it was Quentin, who's like, no, let's not tell Jubilee, because if we do, we're going to be side-benched. So let's go take care of it ourselves.
Okay.
So last panel is the kids going to go address this evil situation by themselves. So we'll see what happens.
So this seems like a very different Generation X.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts so far now that you're 3 issues in?
It's a little difficult to swallow. It's not because it's not the Generation X I'm used to. Mm-hmm. There is some clear references to the old Generation X, actually, in this book specifically. I think it has potential to be good, but it's not fully developed yet. Yeah, I think the team members haven't quite come together. I don't like Quentin Quire. I don't know why he's in this book. It still throws me off. He's probably the biggest downfall of the entire book, so I would imagine he's not the one that I would want to have in the book.
Yeah.
So, that's it. We'll see what happens. Obviously, I'm going to stick it out until it ends, because it has Jubilee. I'll let you guys know how it progresses.
Okay. I guess I'll try to do both of these really quick. I have Gwenpool, which, man, I talked about this in a couple of issues ago in the podcast. I did not think this was going to be one I would bring up again, but it's getting really good. This is issue number 17, and Gwen is back in the regular world, our world, instead of the Marvel Universe. And then one point she starts seeing, like, the title of the issue and, like, the artist's name. And she, at one point, is sitting on the train and reaches out and grabs the panel border of the comic. And then it, like, it's going. And at one point, she's like, oh, there's the, like, I must be talking, like, thinking in speech in, like, the boxes. And so she's, like, trying to grab the box, like, the thought box. And it's too small, so she keeps thinking, and there's this one panel here, page in the middle, where she's thinking so much, like, internal monologue, that it actually, like, it becomes this giant block in the middle of the room and pushes her out the and actually, like, pushes her out the window of her house. I know. It's really funny.
Oh, jeez.
And then, so she's in the hospital, pretty much, and once again is, like, grabbing the panel edges, and it's just getting crazy. And it ends with these couple pages of her totally breaking comics. She literally, like, falls out of comics into this weird dimension. It's insane. I can't really describe it.
That's pretty,
but it's wicked. Actually, yeah. Cool. She hasn't had superpowers up until this point, and I think this is kind of an origin of potential future powers.
You're right, she can break it.
So yeah, her power is to
literally break the fourth wall.
Yeah. So Deadpool will step aside. Gwenpool will come in and take a pencil and just erase you.
That's awesome.
Like, wow. So it was an amazing issue all in all, and just the experimental, like, art style and writing that takes place in it, I was actually, like, really blown away by what's happening.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and, that sounds pretty awesome.
So this way, you do the next one.
In the issue. And so, this one is The Wicked and the Divine. One of my personal favorites. This is one that I usually buy and trade paperback. I feel like everybody who reads a lot of comics has, like, one or two series that they're usually like, oh, I don't buy single issues. I only buy the trade paperbacks. And this is one of those for me. So without giving too much away in the storyline, it's taking a drastic departure from where the first four volumes of this story is going. There's no more Ananke telling them what to do and sort of leading them around, who in the past has been the sort of ancient guiding force for these young gods and goddesses as they are pop stars in the world, pretty much. And so I really wanted to mention this just because the first issue of this volume is amazing. So, like, the premise is there are ancient gods reincarnated as pop stars, pretty much. And so issue, I want to say, 23, this is the first one of volume 5, yeah, issue 23, it has, it's like an issue of Vanity Fair, pretty much. There's interviews with all these gods, and there's, like, these very kitschy artistic renditions of them, complete with, like, pulled out quotes.
That's and awesome.
Advertisements for, like, the gods' various brands, like cologne and cell phones, and and even at the end of the issue, there's like a little meet the writers kind of thing where it gives us a little blurb about all of these fictional writers who did these different interviews with all these different gods and goddesses. It's just an incredibly well written, and the art in it is just beautiful too. If you have any inclination of, like, Wicked and Divine or pop culture at all, it's a great sort of cross of both. I think it really hits home this whole thing that they're doing in it. Anyway, that's it for
awesome.
That.
Mm-hmm. That definitely was really intriguing to just see you flip through that
mm-hmm.
as the the Vanity Fair.
Right. Faux. Like you've seen just a magazine with awesome pictures. I love it. I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really interesting, like, yeah, it's a really interesting concept for a one-off issue. You just have, like, it's literally just a bunch of interviews and pictures, and then every now and then there's, like, these ridiculous advertisements like for,
cologne,
like,
cologne ad?
Yeah, Baal with his, like, cologne, and, you know, there's a capture lightning in a bottle tagline, you know?
That's hilarious.
So.
That's really cool.
All right, so you're enjoying it so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I'm definitely enjoying it a lot.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right, well, I will we'll start into what will be sort of a two-part review. So, Peter Parker, The Spectacular Spider-Man number 1 by Chip Zdarsky and Adam Kubert.
That's right. Mm.
Adam Kubert is listed as the artist in this, so I'm guessing he's either inking himself or they're doing some sort of non-ink digital process. I loved this. I haven't had a good entry point into Spider-Man in years. This was it for me. I read this. I was laughing. Mm-hmm. The book starts with Peter telling his origin story, and you as an audience member are going, why?
Yes.
And then it turns on you and says, why are you telling me your origin again? So, kind of got us there. It's definitely, this is an interesting take. It's adult Peter back in New York, single again, dealing with being kind of lonely in a weird way. Like, mm-hmm. It seems it's a super intelligent Peter that just still doesn't fit into the world. So it's comedic like he was when he was a kid. It's all of the best elements of Spider-Man. When Spider-Man's really good, he's quippy, it's funny, you kind of feel bad for him, but right. At the same time, you're like, well, he's Spider-Man, you can't feel that bad.
Hmm.
The art is astoundingly good. It's so interesting and different for Adam Kubert. He gets the opportunity to really play. He gets to do action sequence and quiet moments, and there's a lot going on, and I'm not sure where it's headed, but as an intro issue to get me wanting more, I absolutely loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I also read this as well, and there's just a couple of things. So in the beginning part, it's really about Spider-Man and Human Torch, and Human Torch is the one that makes the comment, like, why are you telling me this story? I've heard it a million times. I don't need to hear it again. And they kind of make, like, a mandate for, like, later in the evening, which comes back later, and it's so funny when it happens. It actually took me a second because I didn't recognize. Anyways, I'll say it in a second. So then it goes from this, hey, let's make a mandate, I'll see you later, okay. And then to this new potential love interest, Rebecca London, who I really like her as a character. And the fact that she's a comedian, I thought was a very interesting addition. She's a comedian, and she looks amazing. So I think she could be a really great love interest for Peter. And the way that my favorite moment by far is when she flicks her card to Spider-Man, and she's like, and then it bounces off of him and falls on the ground, and Spider-Man looks at her like, why did you do that? And she was like, you stick to stuff, so I just assumed your whole body was sticky, so I thought you would just stick onto your suit. It was so good. It was laughed so hard.
The wonderful awkward moments in this.
Yes, yes.
I want to talk about her design really quick too.
Yeah, yeah.
She's a woman of color with blonde hair and pink highlights.
Almost like Gwenpool's hair.
Mm, yeah.
And I was looking at this going, you couldn't have done this 10 years ago.
Yeah, no.
There was the technology wasn't there to really, like, color this in such a way that you do this sweet color fade.
Yeah.
It was a weird thing for me. Yeah. I looked at it, I was like, wow, this character's super cool, so.
Yeah, and you get to see Peter interact with her in a weird way on the phone, like, being awkward.
Yeah.
About, you know, oh, hi, I'm, and she even, he even says, this is Spider-Man?
Yeah.
And she's like, I want to hear you say that. I know you were Spider-Man, because who else would it be?
Right.
And she's like, I just want to hear you say it stupidly that you're Spider-Man and not your real person. And so it's really funny. Anyways, I think pick it off. This, if yeah. you've never read Spider-Man, this is the new Spider-Man that you should start with.
Yeah, I agree. I like excellent timing on Marvel's part to have the movie coming out and then good say, point. All right, like here's a nice jumping on point for Peter Parker Spider-Man. Because honestly, I think what people have been most interested in has been the Miles stuff. So here's something new and fresh with classic Spider-Man. And
yeah.
I dug it. I think Ant-Man's hilarious in this Ant-Man as well. Ant-Man's hilarious,
too. The whole situation was hilarious.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I feel like they keep trying to start and re... Like, start and stop and restart Spider-Man. Like, they've tried to a couple different times. But yeah, I think, like, the only one that's been consistent is really Miles Morales.
Yeah.
As Spider-Man. So it'll be interesting. And Chip Zdarsky is a really good writer, too.
Yeah, he's
so
hilarious.
Yeah.
The interesting thing, too, the title is the classic Spectacular Spider-Man title.
Mm-hmm.
Was originally called Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man. Then it jumped and changed to the Spectacular Spider-Man. And then a book later became Peter Parker Spider-Man. So now it's, once again, throwing things back. Maybe a hint to Legacy, which we talked about on issue 4.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's throwing things back to the legacy of the character. Bringing him back to New York, too. So.
Yeah. Nice. I'll do my last one really quick then. I have Iceman number 2. So the main thing that you need to know that Iceman is fully gay now. Is that the best way of saying it? Or he's bisexual? I don't know. But definitely his younger Iceman self is fully gay and has like this model looking boyfriend now. And so the adult Iceman's like, all right, if my young one can pull that, I'm sure I could do something and live a life. And so this issue is all about showing him as a professor at the Institute, and then he goes on a mission with Kitty Pryde. And Kitty Pryde's his most recent ex-girlfriend.
Oh.
So, and Kitty Pryde, Iceman's never told Kitty Pryde about this whole situation, right? And so, favorite quote, they're in the plane, and he realizes why she's upset, and she was like, so I had to find out from Gold Balls that you were gay and you couldn't tell me yourself. It was hilarious. I just started busting out laughing. It was perfect.
Oh my
perfect.
Gosh.
But it really is. Iceman's trying to also become an alpha mutant. And so he's really trying to learn how to be like a mega level mutant. Or mega level mutant. So he's trying to figure that out while also at the same time trying to like figure out what it means to be on Tinder and Grindr. So.
He's on that dating grind.
Yeah, he's a little thirsty, this Iceman. I don't know what's going on. But, yeah, he's trying to figure out what to do next. And so...
Oh, boy.
Next issue, he's going home to meet the parents and he's going to tell them that he's gay.
Wow.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens, Iceman.
Yeah.
And, you know, we already know Iceman's dad is super anti-mutants.
Right.
Super, super anti-mutants.
Yeah.
So, take that one step further.
Take it one step further.
Hopefully his dad doesn't give him the cold shoulder.
No.
Sorry, I couldn't help it. Nice to meet you.
That's great. Oh, that's awesome. Okay. That's awesome.
Okay, I'm done.
All right, that's it. That's all I got. So, and they introduce a new mutant, by the way, in this. And that's why Kitty Pryde and Iceman are together on a mission is to go save this new mutant. So,
cool.
Go check it out.
Okay, so for I think the last review we'll be doing today, Leander and I are gonna have to double team this Black Panther. Wow, that came out a lot. Weirder than I. Oh, anyway, Leander and I are gonna
moment.
Get. Leander
move
and I
on,
are totally
along.
Gonna get down on the Black Panther.
Leander
and I
are gonna discuss.
We're going to discuss the Black Panther and the Crew number 3. So, as you probably know, if you've listened to previous podcasts, Black Panther and the Crew. Killing it so hard.
Oh,
Marvel,
best.
Why'd you have to kill it while it's killing it? It's like a double murder up in here.
It is.
T'Challa and Storm are finally, they're teaming up. They're sort of talking to this old, like, 60s revolutionary. Who's introducing them to, like, this crazy lab where they have all these, like, you know, files and weapons ready to, like, you know, overthrow the man, pretty much, left over from, like, the, you know, 1960s and stuff like this. My favorite part of this issue is, so far, a lot of this run has been about gentrification, mm-hmm. especially it takes place in Harlem. So they go to visit this new luxury apartment building where T'Challa and Storm are being shown around this place by this white guy who's dressed very fancy. You know, he has like the bow tie and like the black and white leather shoes. And there's like one scene in this too where
and they're acting like a couple, mm-hmm. like they're trying to buy an apartment or house or condominium together.
Yeah, so there's kind of like this sort of old leftover sexual tension from when they were married, mm-hmm. and stuff, and yeah, so they're posing as a couple to buy this apartment, and which was kind of funny to me because like the king of Wakanda buying an apartment in New York, this guy is literally worth like $10 trillion.
Right. Yeah.
Like that's actually like his literal worth. I'm pretty sure he's a trillionaire.
You'd have to be.
And so there's this part where the guy's talking and he's like, the Black Panther's sort of inner monologuing, like, this guy is raving about Frank Ocean and how he was, like, an African studies major and that he loves cognac old fashions, like, all these super stereotypical things, and none of which T'Challa knows about at all. He's never heard of Frank Ocean. He's like, I need to look up this African studies program at ESU and try an old fashioned, and like he's making these notes, and so it's just really funny to see this. It really reminded me of the movie Get Out, when all these people, there's this black guy at the party and all these white people are trying to impress him with their knowledge of black culture and all this stuff, and he's there like, yeah, cool, and like T'Challa's in the same boat. He's like never heard of any of this stuff. This guy's just like, yeah.
Yeah, it isn't. You can tell he's bucking. He's like, I don't understand what you're talking about. No, I don't get it. I don't understand. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And I like also from the very beginning and the very end. So this guy that they're the whole reason Black Panther and the crew is even teaming up right now in Harlem is that this guy Ezra was held into custody, a black man held into custody, and then was killed during that time frame. And so you find out a little bit more about Ezra, and that he's trying to build this army because he sees that there's superpowers in other countries, that other countries have superpowers, so how come we don't have something? So he really is trying to build his own army in a kind of a way of protecting his people, right, more or less. Sure. And so then the connection between that and then at the very end, it turns up that this apartment building that Storm and Panther went into seems to be run by Hydra. Because if you look at a top view of the entire condominium, you see the Hydra symbol come out of it. So, like, I did not expect the Hydra tie-in, considering everything going on right now with Secret Empire. Mm-hmm. Like, I did not see that coming together at all. And I thought it was really awesome, which makes this book even more relevant to the current what's going on, despite the fact that they're canceling it because they're stupid. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. So, anyways, that was kind of like the big picture of what's going on in Black Panther and the crew.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was really cool. It actually, it reminded me a lot. There's a run, I can't remember if it's last arc or two arcs ago, of Miss Marvel, where she runs up against a luxury condo building company that's also run by Hydra, too. So it's very interesting that, you know, Hydra seems to be like this
in the real estate business.
You know, like, you know, Marvel's very good, like, with the X-Men and all this stuff, like, of being, like, talking about stuff happening now, and, like, you know, the good guys being representative of these, like, people struggling against the bad. And it also seems like they're transitioning Hydra from, you know, back in the day they represented what was bad as in Nazism and mm-hmm. all this stuff. And they seem to be transitioning along with the times to not so much overt, like, racism and this stuff that you saw back in the day, but more to a modern, like a modern time where it's very like subtle and very like microaggression like based stuff, like just pushing out, you know, building luxury condos in their artisanal mayonnaise shops and, you know, in all the places where all these heroes live, and all this stuff. There's just a great juxtaposition throughout between like the old, like the old Harlem neighborhood and new stuff that that is being brought in.
One of the things I liked is if you watch Luke Cage, the barbershop was a big part of the show. And so you could tell, even if you weren't sure about Luke Cage's history, if you watch the Netflix show, you see Misty Knight approaching what obviously has to be that barbershop. Mm-hmm. And so you know that Luke Cage must be involved in this whole situation somehow. And then you just see this huge explosion at the building. And then you see at the end Luke Cage coming out a little bit on fire. And so Luke Cage has now entered the scene because he hasn't been on the scene yet for Black Panther and the crew. So it seems like we almost have the full team together, but I know based on the fact that there's a team picture in the front that we're still missing Manifold. But that's it. But Manifold can come in any time, he can teleport, so it won't be a problem to enter him in.
Yeah, even if it's just in the last issue, issue six, he's just like comes in like, hey guys, what did I miss?
Here and I am.
Like right at the end of the big fight or something like that.
Yeah. So Black Panther and the crew, number three, still killing it, just killing it left and right. So pick it up.
Okay. Well, I think that's all the time we have for now.
That's it.
So, thanks for listening and tune in for the next issue.
See ya.
Bye.